A summer of edition of Necronomapod.
A very summer edition of Necronomapod. With no shoes.
The shoes off, pants off edition.
The pants off edition of Necronomapod, episode 41. So, how you been?
I've been good. I feel like I haven't seen you in a long time, but it's only been about a week.
About a week, yeah. I can't remember what last time you were around. I was around.
I can't either.
Oh, it was over
at...
We were at a party. That was a week ago. More than a week ago. It's a week and a half ago.
Oh, the holiday threw us off.
The holiday threw us off. And what have you been up to since then? You had your legs...
amputated.
vampirized by no-see-ums.
I know. Who knew? Midges.
Midges.
Have you ever heard of midges? I always thought that midges was the best friend of Nancy Drew, but apparently they're microscopic flies that come out of stagnant water and swarm on your lid. And you can't see them. They're just tiny, tiny in there.
Yeah.
It was like all of a sudden, boom, we got these red dots on our arms. And legs.
Were you not...
Here, you can see right here.
Yeah, were you not... oh, my God. Oh, my God. Holy shit.
I know.
Were you not wearing toxic...
We had just gotten there. We had just walked into the campsite.
They were waiting for you. Yeah.
And it was weird. It was like it came from the inside out. It wasn't like something happened to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awful.
It was like, yeah, it was like one of the first plagues of Moses or something.
Yeah, or an early David Cronenberg movie.
But other than that, camping was great.
Sweet, sweet.
Well, you were camping of your own sort.
I went to Nerdy Gras, which is a local sci-fi fantasy horror fan convention here in Doppeltown. We went together to last year. And I had a really good time. I actually stayed down in the neighborhood, so I got to go to the late night parties and got to see the House of Toast. And
was the House of Rice there too?
Oh, Rice was they're constantly slinging rice. They would go through, I don't know how many 50-pound bags of rice a day. Probably like three.
I think
or four.
You should mention the new thing that you. That was at
Well, the new thing that they had there this year, they have all these room parties that kick up at about 8, 9 o'clock at night and go until 2, 3, 4, one of them is the House of Toast. One was a really excellent underground movie thing where I got to see some movies that aren't released in America yet. But possibly the most shocking one was the glory hole of snack food, which is, I don't know if you know what a glory hole is, but make sure your parents aren't in the room and Google it, and then you'll find out. But what it was in this case was this wall that they had built, and there was a little hole about 2 inches wide, little circle, and with a target around it, and it said, "Put mouth here." And when you put your mouth there, somebody popped a little snack in your mouth.
What was the snack that you got?
I did not do this.
Oh, you did?
I didn't. I was just watching it happening. I'm like, okay. Because there was a line, And there was also a very hot and rather risque kissing booth.
What do you mean?
It was right next to the rice room.
What were they kissing?
There was just three women dressed in corsets and, the kind of women that corsets were actually, look good on. There were some hardworking. I'm going to say there were some hardworking corsets at this party. At this party,
the corsets because they're on convention later.
Yeah, what later? and they, for I don't know, for a donation, they were raising money for something, MS or something like that. And you got 30 seconds to make out with one of these women.
Wow, like any kind of making out with you wanted, like tongue.
Well, no. Well, I don't know. They were
finger banging.
Yeah, finger banging. No, I don't think that,
sorry.
But it was kind of fascinating. You sit there and you just couldn't help but, what, you laughing at my old phone?
Yes.
My residual phone? You couldn't help but look, every time you walk by, there's something going on. They're standing up there like... Basically, like Streetwalker saying, are you looking for a good time?
Oh my God. Thank God there wasn't like a felching booth or a shrimping booth.
Yeah, thank God there wasn't a shrimping booth. The Booth of Frottage.
Shrimp for a penny, mister?
House of Frottage. But there was, you know, there was a bunch of, a lot of the stuff that I remembered from last year.
Was the anime room there?
Yes. Well, I spent a lot of time there.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, no, I got to see a lot of anime that I've actually, like, edited articles about, but I've never seen. And, you know, they actually were pretty cool stuff. I also got to see some stuff that I hadn't seen for ages. Like, you know, they weren't just showing anime, they were showing, you know, animation. So at one point they were showing Voltron, Defender of the Universe. Remember that? I watched a half of an episode and I just couldn't.
Was that like a Saturday morning cartoon?
Yeah, it was either Saturday morning or I think it was most likely like after school.
Yes, it was after school.
Yeah, it wasn't Transformers, it was almost Voltron, but it was a Transformers, a giant robot that was made up of four robot cats.
Yes.
Yeah. I was unbelievably stupid.
Yes.
Yeah. But I saw a lot of cool stuff. I saw a lot of good movies at the cinema room.
Oh, yeah.
Spent time with my friend.
Was there like a nerd meltdown like when we were there last time?
No, not really. The
screaming
actually.
Asperger's.
No. No, it was they ran a pretty tight ship. They had a you know, the guests at this convention were the Cinematic Titanic people, who you may also know as the Mystery Science Theater people. So Joel Hodgson and Trace Beaulieu and Mary Jo Peel and...
Oh, Mary Jo.
Yeah, and TV's Frank were all there and really doing panels and stuff. And but the horror person who was there was one of the horror people there, the major one, was Brian Keene.
Yeah, did you go see him?
I did go see him. I actually recorded one of his panels. So if you want to listen to it.
Yeah.
It was very breezy. It was called Writing Horror in the Age of Saw. And the first thing he said is he disagrees with the entire premise of the panel. Because writing horror in the Age of Saw is no different than writing the horror in any other age. Which I think is right, but... But it was good. He seemed like a really cool guy,
Did you buy anything?
I bought a gigantic manga book called A Drifting Life by Yoshihiro Tatsumi. It's just his autobiography. But I've been reading his stuff for a while, and as it gets released in America, and it's really great.
Like a real book.
It's like a real book, but it's all in manga. It's like 800 pages from the end of the war, when he was 10 years old, until he's like a more or less successful manga artist and author. I'm about halfway through, but I spent lots of time reading that.
Did you buy any costumes?
I did not.
T-shirts?
Nor did I wear any costumes. No. You know, the T-shirts I saw there were
fair and middling.
They're fair and middling. They're pretty much the same as I saw last year, except the new one was Vampires Don't Sparkle. Which I enjoyed quite a bit.
It's quite a backlash.
Quite the backlash. No, I had my own nerd t-shirts that I wore, which actually got some comments. Because they were cool, and no one else had worn them.
Well, you are cool.
Well, no.
No.
No, not at all. But I didn't wear any costumes, but I think some of our friends have spoken about wanting to go along next year.
I've heard this.
The J,
from you, actually.
Yeah, the J's and the L.
Well,
I think it'd be fun.
Maybe I'll have to join that.
Yeah, get a room.
It was, you know, what I found very hard about Nerd Festival is, why do they have it in January and July? Why don't they have it in a cold month where, you know?
I don't know.
Where you want to be inside and...
Actually, I really enjoyed being inside. I was having fun.
Well, I enjoyed being outside.
Yeah. No, now I'm enjoying being outside. So, except that we're sitting here now.
Inside.
On a pretty nice night.
It's kind of humid and sticky.
Yeah.
Well.
So.
Enough of that old folderol.
So we digress. So, as you know from our introduction... that you have already recorded and placed earlier in this podcast.
With much rehearsing and script writing.
The book this time is Poppy Z. Bright's
Our Favorite Morning Muffin.
our favorite preteen girl action figure. her debut novel, Lost Souls.
Which was very hard to find, by the way.
I guess I found a copy, but at the first place I looked.
Well, it wasn't in the library.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't anywhere in the library.
Yeah,
in any library in the whole metro area of Doppeltown.
Which is kind of weird. I think it's because whoever buys books for the library system is just not very dedicated to mass market horror.
And even that Forbidden Bookstore.
Uh-huh. They didn't have it?
They had like two copies and they were hidden. They were hidden as well as forbidden.
Well, I got mine.
And these aren't the original books that we have. I mean, these are re-releases.
Yeah, yeah. This is, I think, when was this originally published? Early 90s, right? 92, I
think. Yes. Because I went to the first bookstore, the kind of quasi-forbidden bookstore.
Dream?
Yeah. And they didn't have anything. Zero. They're like, well, you're not going to be able to get that book. It's out of print.
Getting books that are out of print is no problem.
And then I went to the other bookstore, the one I hate.
And they had it.
And I begrudgingly gave them my money.
Sons of bitches. Well, I knew there was a copy at Half Price. I would have told you it was there. But
I went to Half Price.
I had already beaten you to it.
Yeah. So, this is her first book.
Yeah. It is.
Do you know anything about Poppy Bright?
Well, I know she's a New Orleanian.
Yes.
The other famous New Orleanian, New Orleans.
Is there a Bright Rice throwdown every once in a while?
I don't know. But I got to think that, honestly, I got to think that her being an author about vampire novels from New Orleans, New Orleans did not help her career. Because people were like, oh, God, another Anne Rice wannabe.
I have a feeling Poppy Bright's a man.
I've seen pictures.
Oh. Well, there could be pictures of anybody.
Well, I know. I trust that Poppy Bright's a woman, but I could be absolutely wrong. I'm not going to be like poor Robert Silverberg who insisted that James Tiptree Jr. was a man because only a man could write that way.
Mm.
And when in fact it turned out to be a woman. Alice Sheldon.
Oops.
Oopsie doodle. No.
So you know she's from New Orleans and that's about it.
Yeah,
she's
and
pretty
she's,
prolific.
She's prolific. I know that she came up and was lumped in the splatterpunk movement.
Oh,
But as a writer, I don't think she could be much more different as a horror writer than Skip Inspector. Because her writing is actually fairly elegant.
Kinda.
I think her willingness to transgress, however. Is splatterpunk. And this book is transgressive.
Let's say what you mean by that.
One of our main characters, the boy named Nothing, have him sleep with his father unknowingly, and then after he finds out who his father is, keep on doing it.
But they're vampires.
I know, exactly. But, you know, but as a human reader, most would find that transgressive. It was calculated to jolt a little bit.
Hmm.
To introduce an alternate morality.
It's funny because I didn't feel that because they were vampires. They were an alien race.
I think that's what the point was.
I couldn't hold them to the same morality.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what her point was. I think that's what probably the point of the entire book is. But this is a not a gothic novel. It's a goth novel, did you know?
Really?
Like, more than really. Any other
it's novel. This novel was written with mascara.
It was written in mascara.
Yeah.
with mascara clutched in hands that have... The fingernails were painted black. They're in a room decorated with dried roses.
It was funny to, I mean, this is the 90s, right?
Yeah.
And so there were cassette tapes and Walkmans and things that were really alluded to the 90s. It's like, wow, that seemed like it's already dated.
Well, I know, it's dated. It was already dated when it came out. If it really came out in 92, which I think is right, I think this book was in the can for a while.
Some of the bands that it mentioned.
Yeah, because the sensibility is very 1986. So I'm thinking this book had...
Kinda, yeah.
Well, they're all talking about The Cure and Bauhaus and talking about Bela Lugosi being dead.
Bauhaus was mentioned a number of times.
A number of times. And just the whole goth bisexuality and
trisexuality
and you know casual drug use and alienation
and that kind of
parents.
Driving around in a van.
Yeah, it was very goth, and honestly, you know, I don't hold it against the book for some reason because I'm very favorably disposed to this book. It's not my favorite one we read, but I generally liked it. But that stuff did seem very cliched, and not just for, not just in horror, because I don't think you see a lot of that in horror novels. Like actual conscious, we are goth kids who are actually vampires. Not usually. They'll be like punks, or they'll be, you know, the nice man next door, or stuff like that. But as far as what goth culture is like, it seems kind of cliche.
It's a little cliche.
Yeah. Now it seems. Maybe it was innovative back then, but I remember goth culture back in the early 90s.
I just find goth culture just more annoying than anything.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have an attraction to it. I've never pursued it, or I sure as hell couldn't pull it off anymore, for sure. But
you could pull it off as sort of a meatloaf character.
But I certainly could. But I probably couldn't have even when I was, you know, a 17-year-old.
No.
No.
Not with the glasses that you wore.
Not with the glasses.
No. You're Sophia Loren. Whatever those glasses were.
Those are awesome. Shut up. No, I had contacts for a while in high school.
Okay.
But,
I have a mixed feeling about this. Not feeling. I have a mixed reaction to this book.
So half of you is correct and half of you is wrong. Or?
There's things I liked about it and there's things I hated about it.
Yeah,
almost in equal parts.
I can see that. So tell me about it.
No, I think there were too many characters. And she sort of smushes them together for no goddamn reason.
I know.
And it was almost like it would have been better to pursue one track or the other track. Mm-hmm. Follow, you know, keep take a point of view and stay there. Because there's two characters there who are pretty interesting. Ghost is pretty interesting.
Ghost is interesting. Nothing.
And Nothing's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But they're... the way they interact is fairly brief,
yes,
and sort of forced.
Yeah, there's...
And it doesn't go anywhere, and you don't need it.
Yeah. You are right on all counts.
Thank you.
Yeah, you are right on all counts. Yeah, in fact, I'd go even further. And this isn't her fault, but, you know, one of the characters is named on the back cover here, Anne. So you're thinking, oh, Anne is a major character. And you get a little bit of it. You get inside of her head a couple times, but at the end, they just sort of kill her off like a...
Right.
Like...
And did you need to get inside Anne's head? Not really.
Yes and... Well, no. Well, actually, no, you didn't need to, but once you were there, it was actually interesting, and then it just kind of goes away. I wonder what...
Even Christian, the same thing. He was an interesting character.
Yes.
And then he's just sort of... disappeared.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying there was too many characters. There's too many main characters.
Yeah, there were, because I'm seeing 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 5, possibly 6. Well, there's Christian, Nothing, Ghost. I'm blanking on Ghost's friend's name. Sam.
Steven. Not that interesting as a character.
He wasn't that interesting, but he, you get introduced to him first. You are in his head early on.
And the two of them together might have been interesting. And they were interesting.
Yeah, they were interesting.
It's a complicated relationship.
Yeah. You're right, there was. I think their relationship was one of the more successful parts of the book.
I think so too.
And then
kind of touching.
And kind of touching. And Steven's
disturbing.
And disturbing. And Stephen's relationship with Anne was also interesting, and then I think it just kind of loses steam. You know, the situation, the horrible thing he did to her early on.
Yes. Is perhaps, then it's all of a sudden it's kind of gone.
Yeah.
And if they would have just maybe had a couple characters whose heads you got into and the rest were antagonists,
mm-hmm.
it might have been a stronger book.
Yeah.
Instead, because I think when you're inside an antagonist's head, it loses its antagonism. They kind of become an anti-hero or protagonist of some sort.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, can be a good thing, too.
If you have a powerful denouement.
Yeah.
Or climax.
Yeah. And this book, frankly, does not.
It doesn't.
No.
It goes out with a whimper.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't, right now, at this moment, I can't remember even what the climax was.
I'd have to really
think about it.
Anne up and dies. Christian...
Dies.
Ghost and...
Zyla.
Yeah, Zyla.
Dies.
What happens to the other...
These sucky twins.
The sucky twins join...
Die.
Up. Well, they don't. They join up with... Nothing becomes their new leader.
No, there's two other people. Those sucky twins are different people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're a different vampire.
I must have misread it. And then, what else? That's about it.
Ghost doesn't die. Steven doesn't die.
Yeah. They kind of go back home and live there.
They open up a co-op or something.
Open up a greeting card store. No. I was reading a little bit about this, people's opinions about this book on the interwebs, and the consensus is generally the same, that this book is deeply loved by a lot of people, and those same people also recognize that this is probably Poppy Bright's least assured book, but it made her name, and this is what made Poppy Bright, famous, such as she is. And she's built off the reputation that off of this.
Well, it'd be interesting to read a more mature book and see what
it would be. I think she's kind of departed from the horror genre a bit.
Yeah, she's doing like erotica or something. Or
see, I could read that.
What did you think about her take on vampirism? Which has been done before, of course. But.
Yeah, her particular take on vampirism wasn't revolutionary. It was, there are different species that can interbreed with humans.
With huge consequences to the human.
Yeah.
To
the female, yeah. Which element was picked up almost whole by Stephanie Meyer for the Twilight books.
Yeah.
Those consequences being that, yes, a human can become pregnant by a vampire, but... the pregnancy will, in every case, kill the mother.
And the vampire is not an undead. Like Saint Germain, Tanith Lee's.
Is it Tanith Lee or Chelsea Quinn?
Or Chelsea Quinn,
Yarbrough. Yeah.
The Saint Germain, he's an alien.
Oh, okay.
Or he's another species. He's not the undead.
Yeah. Yeah, the other species thing is also, remember that book by Susie McKee Charnas, The Vampire Tapestry?
Yeah, maybe that's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah, with He's a Different Species.
Yes.
Yeah. The professor, what's his name?
Yes. Saint Germain.
No. Saint Germain is Susie McKee Charnas's series.
Oh.
There's a bunch of those books.
Oh.
But anyway, yeah, so it's a different species. But it's, it's not a parasite.
Supernatural.
Nothing particularly supernatural.
They can eat regular food, apparently.
Yep, they just really prefer the taste of blood.
Their spawn don't really come into their own until they're later in life.
Yep.
They're more immortal than anything.
Yeah, but they can be killed, and frequently are. Not frequently, but it's something that they face.
They have super strength, it sounds like, of some sort.
Yep. And
persuasive powers of
and they're hypersexual and they're
nothing had some sort of power to like create a mood or something because he was able to
that.
Yeah, because he was able to sort of influence the other two vampires and
right
something else, some kind of
Which is also what was stolen from Stephenie Meyer, because one of the characters had that.
Oh, by yeah,
power.
Yeah, wasn't it
Crazy Egg one?
The Crazy
Jasper.
Egg. Jasper. Oh God, I remember the books. They stuck. Who would have thunk?
So sorry.
I'm so sorry.
So sorry.
You know, the book is, you know, has a lot of interesting things going on in it. And as I was reading it, I didn't read this very, very quickly.
I didn't either. It took a while to get through it.
It took like two full weeks for me to do it. I actually finished it at Nerdygra.
Mm-hmm.
I was just sitting there reading the last couple pages in a big Santa Claus looking guy with a vest. Said, "Hey, what you reading?" And I got stuck in a conversation for about a half an hour that ended up in UFO territory.
Oh dear.
So I finally had to stand up and say, "Oh, look, the movie's about to start." But he did actually recommend a couple of good horror books. He was really into apparently his daughter had recommended the Laurel K. Hamilton books.
Oh,
have you read any of those? I haven't read any of those.
I tried.
Oh really? Okay, yeah. We're not going there.
No.
I recommend that we not.
Yeah.
Alright then. There's graphic novels. I'll read a couple of those.
Okay.
Get them out of my system. Anyway, I finished this, but I didn't lose the thread, partially because the book was so episodic, you could always find an easy breaking point.
Right.
But I didn't want to rush through it either, because what was going on the individual pages, the language that she, once in a while, she'd have these really elegant and innovative descriptions and turns of phrase.
Do you remember? Like what?
Well, I mean, I'll just see if I can find something here.
All right. So I have to vamp.
They were not I didn't grab a highlighter and highlight them or anything like that, but I just thought,
I thought some of the sentence construction, the grammar was not very well. There were some sentences that were like, what?
I don't remember being upset by that. Mm-hmm. And I professionally can get very upset by that sort of thing.
I'm seeing you have a hissy fit now and then.
I know.
The vampirism and sexual stuff is really intertwined in this book.
Yes, yes. I'm not going to find it. I just picked up something and it looked fine, but you know, just take my word.
Okay.
It was my opinion that I was personally entertained.
Cite your sources.
Lost Souls by Poppy Z. Bright, copyright 1992, Leisure Books. No, lost it. Pages 1 to 384. pass him. Anyway, the vampirism and the sexuality was very entwined, which, you know, it has been.
And kind of smelly. I was thinking all this blood and all this.
Yeah.
And the biting of the victim was not elegant at all. It was fairly animal and fairly gruesome.
Yeah, that they had to, if they wanted to like make a clean bite, they had to actually file their teeth sharp to actually get in. So when Nothing makes his first kill, which is his kind of simpering friend, Lane.
Yeah, that was sad.
It was sad. That was sad. That affected me.
And it pissed me off, too.
Yeah, I did, too. But I think that was your first real introduction into, Nothing is entering a different morality now. And the writer is not going to condemn it outright, and she never does.
She never does.
Yeah.
In fact, she fairly much condones it.
Her other characters condemn it. But the writer herself does not take a position.
I don't know if her other characters condemn it.
Well, yeah. Otherwise, Zilla would be alive at the end.
Well, only because Zilla was an ass.
Well, yeah.
It wasn't their morality that was the problem. It was that he got her pregnant and he was an ass. He was...
Yeah. He's a deadbeat dad. They deserve to be...
He's a total deadbeat dad spreading his vampiric seed.
His wild vampire oats. but I think that's another thing is that another thing that I really liked about this book was that she didn't judge on the page.
No.
I mean, if you asked her, you know, do you really? And she, I'm sure she's like, well, of course not. But see, I'm presenting this as an alternative morality that is self-consistent.
And what do you say is that morality? What would be the constructs of that morality?
The morality of vampires towards humans is almost exactly like the morality of humans generally towards chickens.
Except we don't mate with chickens. For the most part,
we don't.
Maybe vampire to human is white slave owner to slave.
Yes. Sure. Yeah. But there's something about, I mean, it's a combination of the two, really, because, yes, vampires can mate with humans in this book, but at the same time, they're food. Humans are something to be consumed, comestibly or sexually.
Yes.
And humans' relations to their food... They play with their food. Yeah, they're not aware of it. Humans are not aware of it for the most part, but there is a morality there. And our vegetarian friends sometimes will look at us omnivores or carnivores, look down at us, and the vegans will look at the vegetarians who are eating eggs and do the same thing. And it's an alternative morality. This one is the next step up from carnivore, yeah. Or down from carnivore, and you know, try it on. But there's also an alternative sexual morality. Yeah. So that
they really are kind of reminding me of Studio 54 or something. They'll have whoever, whenever,
and if you're famous, you can go down to the basement room,
right?
Yeah,
or up to Floor 16.
Which didn't exist.
Yeah.
I looked.
I looked last year too.
I know. Maybe I need to look at like 2 in the morning.
Exactly. That would scare me.
It would actually scare me. I was looking, but I didn't want to see.
I just didn't want to see it.
So the same thing with the sexual morality. And you get this early on. Letting Lane blow him early on, and just casually, like, you know, just, you know, I don't feel like doing this, but what the hell, you know, we'll
keep something Lane, to do,
something to do,
yeah.
Nothing himself blowing the preacher, the itinerant preacher,
right?
Just to get a ride, you know, it's no big deal, and it never ever becomes a big deal,
no.
It really isn't a big deal to me.
Well, the sexual lines were very blurred,
yeah,
and fluid.
Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, I think what the ultimate test of that is, you know, when Nothing finds out that he has been sleeping, that Zilla is his father, this man he's been sleeping with, and he just makes a mental note of it and keeps right on sleeping with him, all in the family. And it's not a big deal, and it never becomes a big deal.
No.
Not to Nothing, not to Zilla.
No.
So, I mean, I found the book interesting in that.
I found that whole quasi-incest thing didn't really ruffle my feathers, because, you know, in vampirism, in most vampire novels, there's ways of creating a spawn.
Yeah.
Of some sort of being, I'm their, mm-hmm. What their word always is. I'm their sire.
Sire,
that's right? The word.
Yeah,
and that's how I thought of it. It was just like, this was just another way of siring.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a movie that I saw some years ago called Murmur of the Heart. It's a French movie, and I'm trying to remember who directed it. I want to say Louis Buñuel, but I'm probably wrong. But in this movie, it's about a mother and a son. The father is somewhere else, and they're at like some sanitarium, like a health place, like, you know, like mineral baths and stuff like that.
Right.
And at the end of the movie, the mother and the son is like 13, have sex. It's just one thing. I mean, just naturally, one thing leads to the next, and it's perfectly organic and natural. And you're sitting there watching this happen, and you're not particularly shocked. And you see it happening, and then the next morning, they both wake up, and it's fine. It's totally fine. This movie was made in the 60s, I think.
There was a movie like that with Jill Clayburn.
Blew my mind. What? Yeah?
It was a big movie.
I can't.
She's an opera singer. It was in the 70s. It was. She has sex with her son. Would it be different if a man had sex with his daughter?
Yeah, well, I think of another movie, Spanking the Monkey. Remember that one?
Yes.
That's another one where the son has sex with his mother. And then that one is much different because he wants to get out of it. He's being sucked into this home domestic situation that he wants out of. And that's what pushes him over the edge. He gets the hell out then. But
not in this book.
Not in this book.
He's like the character Nothing is looking for his tribe. You know, basically it's that sort of, I'm an outcast, I don't fit in, I've got to find my people.
Yeah. Now, what did you think of the coincidences in the book? There were some groaners.
The whole book was coincidences.
Yeah.
Synchronicity.
Yeah.
It was convenient.
Yeah, it was very convenient. And that was an element that actually pissed me off, because I was hoping that there'd be some sort of, like...
Explanation,
and I think it was just shoddy plotting.
Well, I mean, they kind of allude to it because Ghost has these kind of extraordinary powers, and it seems to be... There seems to be something, if not predestined, but there's some kind of... There's something working in the background. You're not quite sure what is at work, and he's a channel for it somehow.
Yeah.
So...
I guess
it is a cheesy way of taking care of some problems.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the plot... The plotting was, it seemed to me, kind of ham-fisted. You have all these pieces sort of moving across the map.
And we've talked about this before with some other books where, you know, it's clear that, you know, there's these pieces and everyone has to move and you see that it's going to move and it's going to end up in a confrontation and you see that it's... Yeah. I mean, it's not a surprise. None of it's a surprise.
None of it's a surprise. Yeah, none of the meetings are a surprise. There was none of that delight when, even if you know that they have to meet, you weren't, like, surprised at how they met. You just, you know, they just met. It's just like, oh, now they're in the same room. You can see them heading to the same place 50 pages before they get there. Like, they're all going to this town. Well, they'll probably meet in a club. The only one was Nothing getting picked up by the van, which was pure Deus Ex Machina.
Sure.
Yeah. It was like, the author requires that these characters meet now. Right. And therefore it happens.
And they did.
And they did.
And the... Some of it didn't follow the inner logic of the vampires, because, you know, they enter the house.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to prey on Ghost and Steven.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow they get overpowered and they don't come back and try to devour. I mean, why could they do this with everybody else but not these two guys?
Yeah.
That made it a little...
It creaked there for me, too.
And it wasn't explained.
Well, I think it was because...
Except Nothing's relationship.
Nothing, because of the wild card of Nothing.
Right.
Because Nothing...
But that wasn't clear enough.
It was, it could have been clearer, but I just kind of went with that. That one didn't bother me as much as other things did. But yeah, you're right. It creaks.
It creaks. I was hoping to be more excited about this book, and I wasn't.
Yeah, I was...
I was really looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, we were... We chose this book specifically because... we wanted Poppy Bright's biggest book, and this is, you know, for better or worse, this is still it. I think we would do better to have read one of her later books, like Wormwood or something.
When
like
I think about Anne Rice's novel, her first book, and compare it to this, Anne Rice's book is superior.
That's Interview, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was.
It really was. The characters, it was simpler in a way.
Yeah.
And there was a lot internal logic, and
it was kind of, and it was, and you know, it doesn't seem so anymore. It's because of so much water has gone under the bridge, but it was pretty revolutionary.
It was, yes,
it was revolutionary.
I remember it because I read it in eighth grade.
Yeah,
and it's like, wow.
You get the sweep of history. You got
and a sympathetic character,
and you get all that sense of that secret underworld that is runs deep and is ancient.
And nobody, or what was his character? No one.
Nobody.
He was not a sympathetic character.
He was to me, but...
He wasn't to me. I kept thinking of Adam Lambert from American Idol.
You know, that's exactly what he looks like. I don't watch American Idol, but I know who Adam Lambert is.
That's
He's got that ridiculous emo hair.
Yes.
Yeah, before that was emo
and
hair.
And mascara.
Yeah.
And mascara, yeah. And fingernail polish, and
mm-hmm.
A jean jacket with... Yeah. Studs and boots.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I could see Adam blowing somebody in
totally.
A van somewhere.
Totally. Just to get a ride.
Yeah. Just to get a ride. just to get a record deal.
The infrastructural Hummer. It's how people get from one place to another.
And in the end, it was like, the end of this book was sort of like, why can't the farmers and the cowboys be friends?
I know. That's right. Yes. What did you think of the epilogue? I thought it was completely unnecessary.
It was absolutely unnecessary.
Oh, it's absolutely unnecessary.
Because what did it take place, 15 years later?
50 years later. So you know, if my theory is right, that the main action takes place in mid to late 80s. So that would be like 2030 something. And then what I think that is, Poppy Bright got her break because she was taken under the wing of Harlan Ellison, who liked her transgressive style. Harlan Ellison loves pushing buttons. So I think that was a stop to Harlan Ellison. You throw a little sci-fi in there.
The problem with the pushing buttons thing is that at some point in history... What's pushing buttons here when you get in the future, in the present, those buttons...
They don't work anymore.
It's like Lady Shirley's lover.
Yeah.
Like, oh, shocking. Ooh, smelling salts. You don't need... It's not...
It's quaint.
Yeah, it's quaint. It's like, oh.
I know. Trying to push buttons will date you. Although it's interesting, you know, you look at a book from 100 years ago that is supposed to be transgressive, and you'll see that some of the things that were supposed to be transgressive aren't anymore, but some still are. And it's interesting what those things are.
You think there's something like this in this book?
Transgressive stuff?
That will 20 years, 100 years from now, you go, oh, well, that's not transgressive. That's whatever. That's passé, but... is there something fundamentally...
The absolutely casual sex, I think, is very close to being unshocking.
Yes.
The incest, I think, is going to last for a while.
Incest lasts forever.
Incest is forever.
It's like a diamond. Incest and diamonds are forever.
Are forever.
If you look diamonds are forever and incest forever, that means diamonds are incest.
Your logic is sound. I was just watching. I've been on this kick. I've been watching a lot of early 70s like crime thrillers.
Porn.
Well, yeah. No, crime thrillers. One of them. I watched two of them last week. I watched Jodie Foster when she was 14, 15. Maybe.
Little Foxes.
No. It was before that. It was called The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane. The actress is probably 14 or 15, and she has a nude scene.
Shocking.
Shocking. But her character is 13. And then I also saw the movie Night Moves.
Night Moves.
Yeah, I know.
Is that one?
It's before that song.
Oh.
Which starred Gene Hackman and a very young Melanie Griffith. Melanie Griffith was probably 21 when she filmed it, but she was playing 16. And she's naked almost through the entire movie.
How'd she look?
Pretty good. as both of the movies were actually pretty good. But this reminded me of remember that joke they make in the end of Annie Hall, where Woody Allen is stuck in L.A. and he calls his friend, played by Tony Roberts, who's like a TV actor out there now, to bail him out of jail for like getting in a car accident. And Tony Roberts is upset. He's saying, he goes, I was with 16-year-old girls, twins. That never happens, even in L.A. That was played for laughs. And I was just thinking, how much has changed in, was it 35 years?
Yeah.
Because, yeah. A,
nobody would have laughed. Nobody will laugh at that.
No. Nobody will laugh at that anymore. And those scenes, and man, you know, I remember when those movies were, all those movies were in theaters. And nobody, it wasn't a big deal. But now, you couldn't even think about filming something like that, even if the actors were of age.
Oh, no. It's funny because we were talking about at the office about therapists. I mean, therapy in the 70s. One, people weren't licensed. Which,
licensed,
whatever, licensed. Who cares? I mean, why would you have to be? But that's a product of now. But,
yeah.
You know, therapists were sleeping with their clients and people were doing hot tub baths therapy and there was nude encounter groups and, I mean, anything.
All very therapeutic.
Everything went. Yeah. And. Nobody,
yeah. You know. Bad things happen, good things happen, just like today.
Right. We're a little bit more, I don't know what the word is.
Yeah, and it's funny, I mean, there's got to be actually probably several books out there tracing this, because everybody thinks that, you know, that morality gets looser and looser as time goes by.
It doesn't feel like it's looser,
It doesn't.
It feels like it's more.
It's getting tighter.
Yeah, it feels like it's tighter and that.
Yeah.
There's more eyes on things and there's much more judgment. And,
yeah. Yeah.
And same kind of conversation with the client about pot. Like when he was a kid, it's like, yeah, people would just like, you can get a huge bag of pot for not a lot of money. And
yeah.
People would go to parties and just throw all their pot into a big bowl. And
yeah, you just take
even
it
though, like, you didn't, it wasn't like something you like announced, it wasn't as, there wasn't the freaked outness about things.
Yeah.
Which is the weird thing. There's more things, I think, that happen, or at least we know of. Yeah. There's more things that we're aware of. These things have always happened.
Yeah, they've always happened.
We're just more aware of them, and our freak-out factor is quadrupled.
It's quadrupled. And I think,
like, people, like, Time Magazine, infidelity in marriage, you know, as if it's this brand new thing, you know, it's destroying marriage. It's like, you guys...
Really? That's all you have?
On.
You're putting this on the cover?
Marriage equals infidelity.
Yeah, you can't have infidelity without marriage.
Right. And that is like since the beginning of whenever marriage was conceived.
So you can be I'm just kidding.
But it's not that new. It's not, it's just that we're talking about it. And,
yeah.
You know.
It's just,
which is.
We should probably.
Wow.
We should probably.
Well, it's cocktail time, for crying out loud. Well, there you go. What's right. Our cocktail?
All right, well, you know, we discussed this at great length.
I know. Well, chartreuse is in this book a lot.
Yeah, well, we
that's the main drink.
That is
and
the
beer.
And beer. But I think we were going to key off of the chartreuse.
Uh-huh.
And also key off the whole like, New Orleans thing.
Yes.
New Orleans has a couple of signature drinks. One is the hurricane.
Yeah.
But we're not going to be doing that. So we're going to be doing the other one, which is apparently, according to legend or maybe even fact, is the first cocktail. It's the Sazerac.
The good old Sazerac.
The good old
Meshach and Abednego.
Sazerac, Meshach and Abednego. So we're going to do a version of the Sazerac that incorporates chartreuse, which is actually pretty simple. Here's your basic Sazerac ingredients. You have... like a sort of a small rocks glass,
uh-huh.
And you chill it. And you generally just fill it full of ice and make it cold. But I just take it and throw it in the freezer. Also, in the other glass, you take and you put in a cube of sugar,
uh-huh.
And you shake onto it
Peychaud's Bitters. Uh-huh. P-E-Y-C-H-A-U-D-S. That's the Sazerac. That's what Peychaud's Bitters exists for, is to be put into Sazeracs. It's sort of a bright red. They're kind of bloody. There you go. Vampires.
Perfect.
Perfect. And then you muddle that around, and you put in two shots of rye. And then in the glass that you have in the freezer, you take some chartreuse. Now, chartreuse is
very herbal.
Very herbal. It's actually, it's kind of like an absinthe-y tasting thing. The original Sazerac has absinthe at this stage, but we're going to use chartreuse. What you do is you put a couple of drops, you know, quarter teaspoon of chartreuse in the glass that's cold, and you swing it out just so you coat the outside of the glass. And then, you know, you can pour the chartreuse back in the bottle, or you can just shoot it in your mouth. That's what I do. And then you take the mixture of rye and sugar and whatnot, and you pour that in the glass.
When you drink it.
And then, oh, actually, I almost forgot. When you mix the rye and everything, there should be an ice cube in there to cool it down.
Okay.
And then you strain that into the chartreuse
glass.
And then you take a twist of lemon, you squeeze it around the rim, and throw it in.
And it's delicious.
And it's delicious. We've been having, I don't know, we've been drinking these for hours now. So, there you go. We don't have a name for it.
Oh, it's called Old Green Eyes.
Old Green Eyes? You just call it the Chartreuse Sazerac.
Okay.
Chartreuse Sazerac.
Chin-chin.
Chin-chin.
Well, now that we've had all these drinks, I think we have to go down to the cellar.
I know. It's a good thing we have a handrail, because, you know, these Sazeracs, they don't so much sneak up on you as they just, like, sort of drop on you from the sky.
I'm kind of wanting to have our friend Jason's walker.
Yeah.
Get down the, really, that's just for drunks, the
it's
walker.
It's just for drunks.
It's all Grandpa's right. Little helper.
Grandpa's little helper. All right, let's go.
Let's go down there.
Ooh, you know,
it's refreshing to be down here.
It's refreshing, but you know, the humidity really starts things blooming on here, doesn't it? Is that a morel? Oh, look, shelf fungi on the shelves.
Well, what are we reading? We haven't even really, perused the stacks.
I have the same idea I've had week after week after week.
All right,
so,
spit it out.
Well, do you have any ideas?
I don't.
All right, my idea is to finally read China Mieville's Perdido Street Station.
Can I get that at the library? I can't buy any books this month.
Yes.
All right. Are you positive?
I am positive.
All right. If not, will you eat your words?
I will eat my words. I'll give you my copy and go buy a new one.
All right.
That's what I'll do.
All right. China Mieville's
Perdido Street Station. It's, you know, I'm not actually 100%
sure. You know anything about it?
I'm not. Well, it's the central text of this new genre called the New Weird.
Ooh.
The New Weird.
Ooh.
That makes me think of the old weird, which is like weird tales, like Lovecraft and Clark Ashton Smith and those kind of things, which are horror, kind of. And so I'm not 100% sure that this book is going to technically be horror. It might be like dark fantasy. But I'm sure we'll have a lot.
Maybe it's something like the translation of. Remember the book, the translation of Father
Torturo.
Yeah, which wasn't really horror, but
yeah, it could be, or like that Michael Sisko book, The Divinity Student.
That was the other one I was thinking
of.
That's probably
like,
in that.
Yeah,
ilk.
Which. You know, I've been thinking about The Divinity Student a lot lately, and I kind of want to read the sequel.
Oh, what's it called?
I can't remember. They're both published in a book called The San Beneficio Canon.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You have that book too.
I do. Yeah. But no, I want to read the one that everybody points to first.
Okay,
I saw at least three people reading this book at the.
I think we should then
at the Nerdy Grass. So yeah, so let's do it. It's a big book, so it'll be a while before we actually, you know,
podcast on it.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right,
here's the
there we go.
Copy.
Sticky.
Back up here.
Still sticky.
Back up here in the Schwitz.
Well, is there anything else you want to mention?
Well, I've been reading another book. Since I finished this one, I've been reading Thomas Ligotti's My Work Is Not Yet Done. And it is fan.
Those are short stories.
Fantastic. Right? It's a novella and then two short stories.
Okay.
But they all have to do with the corporate world. And it's. I'm gonna be done with it probably tonight or tomorrow.
Okay.
And I'll let you read it because it's really something.
Well, I've picked up the new
is it a book? Does it have pictures?
Well, it's that Jim Baxter
Butcher. Oh, the Dresden Files?
Dresden Files. I picked up the new Dresden Files one.
Well, good for you.
Because I've read all of them so far. So.
I've read none of them.
Yeah.
Are you excited about the new Cirque du Freak movie coming out?
I'm excited now. I didn't really know anything about it. When's it come out?
I've seen
stuff. We really should read Cirque du Freak before it comes out.
We'll do it after this one.
We have to read all of them because they're short.
All right.
There's like 13 books.
I'll get working on it. We're gonna do a 13 book series in one podcast. I'm up for it. All right, I'm all over it.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
All right, we're going to do it.
When does it come out?
I think the film's in the can already, so I'm guessing around the holidays, maybe early next year.
Oh, yeah, we need to get a jump on it.
All right. You know, there's a new Joseph Delaney book out. It's short stories set in the...
Dexter books?
No. The Spook.
Oh.
The Spook books.
What about... Is there a new Dexter book out yet?
I haven't seen one.
That's taking a long time.
Well, you know.
The new Suki something mystery.
Suki Stackhouse.
And that book, there's a new one of those books that just came out.
She has officially ascended into the...
She's in the pantheon now.
In the pantheon. The big posters in the window of Barnes & Noble.
She's the adult Twilight.
Yeah.
Because they're not really well-written books.
No.
But apparently the series is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm about to start watching it. I haven't seen it yet. Pretty excited.
Do you have it on your Netflix? Oh my God, well I have to watch it with you.
Alright, this will happen.
Because I'm waiting for my friend to give me his copy and I still haven't gotten it yet.
He's no friend of yours.
He's a bastard.
Son of a bitch.
And I'm looking forward to Harry Potter coming out.
Yeah, that's this weekend.
And even though this is old news right now, then the new Star Trek is fantastic.
Yeah, you still like that?
Yeah,
I'm still
talking about it.
It was pretty great.
Yeah.
Did you see it again?
I would see it again. Because Mike wants to see it again.
Yeah, go see it again. Because the second time through...
Mike wants to see it. He hasn't seen it yet.
Even better. Even better the second time through.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. So.
And I'm looking forward to the Vampire Letters series starting in...
Yeah. I just wanted to share with you the one more observation from Nerdygraph.
Yeah.
And the most popular costume.
Oh, no.
That I saw. Aside
was
from,
it a giant fox with the penis, the genitals areas cut out?
No. Oh. Although I did see one furry, and okay. it was a wolf, not a fox.
Okay.
It was Dr. Horrible.
That's funny.
Lots of Dr. Horribles. And Captain Hammers.
I almost forgot about Dr. Horrible.
Well, they had the election again this year. Last year, they had the election of the
Batman
three.
And...
Yeah, no, the election this year was between Dr. Strangelove, Dr. Evil, and Dr. Horrible. It was for Surgeon General. Dr. Horrible won, yeah, by a lot. Yeah, but I probably saw 8 Dr. Horribles, including one that was about 6 years old.
He's an easy costume.
He was a pretty easy costume. Yeah. But the big thing this year was steampunk fashion.
Oh yeah, that was big last year though.
Yeah, but it was even bigger because there was a steampunk fashion show, which was actually pretty fantastic. Some of these get-ups were so elaborate and so well done, but they all had goggles. Can't be steampunk unless you have goggles on your forehead.
You really need the goggles because the steam gets in your eye.
Exactly.
In fact, I think there's a song for that.
All right.
Steam gets in your eye.
All right. So what should we do with this? Should we...
Let's put a stake in it. Let's just put a stake in it and then cut off...
And fill its mouth with chartreuse.
And cut off its head. Like we always do.
And then have some more chartreuse.
Yes.
All right.
Very good.
Enjoy.
See you next time.
Bye.
Those found without specific military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Wow.
It's gotten mixed reviews.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of smart people in the world, and there's also a lot of dumb people in the world, and that's where mixed reviews come from.